Jenkins versus Chrysler, Mr. Haley.
Please the court, good morning. This case comes to the court after a jury finding in which there were two very serious deviations from well-established evidence of rules of evidence and prior holdings of the Seventh Circuit on both of the evidentiary proceedings. I begin by conceding the restraint that we should use in bringing before you evidentiary ruling kinds of challenges, as they're clearly generally held to be within the discretion of the court. However, discretion of the courts, by definition, does not include a deviation from clear rules of evidence and case holdings of the circuit. In this case, in January of 97, Brad Jenkins received burns to approximately 20% of his body. At issue was a reasonableness in notice and the other general provisions of a product liability. It was a product liability case under the Indiana statute. Prior to the beginning of the trial, a motion in limine was held, proceedings were held where his prior drinking convictions, driving an automobile while intoxicated convictions, and post convictions dealing with automobile use or treatment in a facility inpatient for alcohol use was excluded. It was excluded under Rule Article 4 because of the highly prejudicial nature of this information, and it's found to have little of any probative value on the issues involved in the case. At the trial of the case, however, the defendant alleges that there was a, quote, opening of the door. The opening of the door in this case was a father's description of his child after he had been burned over 20% of his body. Never was there an issue in this matter about him operating the automobile. He was sitting in the automobile when it caught on fire while idle.
Yeah, but the father testified to a change in his outlook.
Yes, he
too cheerful, and now he was depressed. Well, but of course his history of alcoholism cast doubt on that testimony.
The history of alcoholism
of the plaintiff.
The father, when answering a question about his son prior and post accident, used a series of adjectives. He referred to a twinkle in his eye that was no longer there, and he used the word depressed as an appearance.
Well, if the twinkle in the eye is some artifact of alcoholism, I would think a defendant is entitled to bring that out and say this is unlikely to have been this happy, carefree child that the father described.
The twinkle in the eye was describing him as a minor prior to any alcohol involvement, prior to the time he knew what alcohol was.
But it would be completely irrelevant unless he was trying to draw a contrast between pre- and post-accident.
What he was doing was describing the general condition, and that condition is not being described much differently than what most people would demonstrate drinking or not drinking after having 20% of their body.
But the relevant time is immediately before and immediately after the accident. Or maybe sometime after the accident, a change in mood, a change in decline in happiness. And I understood the father's testimony to be that before the accident, his son was happy, and after his accident, sad. But before the accident, he was an alcoholic. It's unlikely that he was as happy as the father portrayed him.
But when the door
opened, at least the judge could decide that, you know.
Well, but at least in this case, Your Honor, a preliminary determination has already been made as to the inflammatory nature of the information. So now we're dealing with information which has already pre-trial been determined as explosive, to say the least. The door opening, it's sort of like your Gagan case, where you had the issue involving tax ramifications, and the motion in limine was filed in that case, and the court decided we're going to allow damages to be placed before the trier of fact, and we're going to limit testimony on tax ramifications of those damages, and tax ramifications under those facts would have been mitigating to the defendant. And the fact that tax was mentioned did not open the door then to go ahead and do the tax calculations and therefore mitigate for the defendant. The fact that his mood or an adjective depressed appearing was used, along with many other adjectives, to describe his post-accident condition by his father, did not open the door for the following: all convictions prior to the accident, all arrests prior to the accident, all convictions after the accident, even hospitalization for non-related matters to this incident, but after the accident. So what essentially happened is the highly inflammatory and otherwise lacking probative value information comes in pre, post, the whole ball of wax was opened up.
Well, what if this evidence was even admissible in the first instance?
Pardon?
What if this evidence was even admissible in the first instance? That's the question. Why would it have been excluded altogether here, with given the blood alcohol content of this fellow at the time of the...
Yes, again, because why was it excluded?
Yeah.
One,
well,
because...
It's a little prejudicial, but you're bringing the case. And
well, because basically it doesn't fit under... It doesn't, while even relevant, it was found to be prejudicial, it doesn't fit under 609 as an admissible these convictions and this prior and post conduct. So that's why it was found to be inadmissible.
Well, is it relevant that you want to show in defense of a case like this that this guy was intentionally putting himself into positions of hazard to himself and had done so in the past?
No, the uncontroverted...
So again.
I apologize for that interruption. No, because the uncontroverted evidence in this case was that he was not... This isn't a case where he's operating a motor vehicle and alleging a product failure.
He started the car, though. When you start the car, you want to start driving it.
And what the judge felt when she originally excluded the evidence is what you don't assume when you start an automobile and sit in it, that at some point in time... It reaches a point where it starts on fire. The assumption is that you can sit in it and it'll idle and it'll never start on fire and, in fact, run out of gas first. That would be the more logical assumption as we operate these automobiles, not that there's some period of idling in a relatively new vehicle in which its quick connections fail and then causes it to catch on fire.
See, I don't disagree with you. I think the judge probably did the right thing by excluding this evidence, but I don't think it was... an automatic that you were going to win a motion in limine here. It was probably a fairly close case. He excluded it, but then later decided that the door was open enough to let the defense get some of this in.
And again, I think when you really look at the decisions that have been developed by this circuit on this type of information, this type of material, when you look at Cameron and Robinson, and when you look at even your Mankey case, here's an accident scene with a hash pipe. And this circuit found, no, that's inadmissible because it's not factually or foundationally related to really the issue of negligence involved in the accident, which was prior of fact was decided. Second part, however, ruling is even more troubling, and that is following the logic of some of the questions about opening the door. Here we had a manufacturer who was able to testify through engineer Bantha, the chief design engineer and witness that they used in product liability cases at Chrysler, that in fact they had no knowledge of these quick plastic quick connects causing fires in their vehicles prior to 1995. Later he said that the connection between leakage and these quick connects may have been as late as 96. The fire was in 97, the recall was in 97. So that was presented to the jury to be quick, swift. The jury is looking at notice, and they're looking at reasonableness. The plaintiffs sought to introduce plaintiff's exhibit number 56 to show that, in fact, Chrysler had known about leaks in the quick connects. They had used these quick connects before and knew about leaks in these quick connects back in the 80s, in 1987.
How does that bear on liability?
Under the facts in the brief, it bears on both. It should have been admissible based on, first of all, for impeachment purposes. He's obviously testified, and I don't think any of us are denying or questioning that they are.
No, but why is the issue of notice relevant to liability?
Because what the jury, in fact, under the Indiana product statute, is being asked to decide is reasonableness. And in fact, should I finish?
Sure.
In fact, if they did not know about the defect until 1995, made no connection to the defect and the fire to 1996, and then did issue recall 722 in 97, a jury might look upon that one way, as opposed to if it all occurred that knowledge was in their possession in 1987, a decade before. That is the distinction.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Haley. Ms. Spring?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Linda Spring. I represent Daimler Chrysler. The important thing to recognize in this case is that there was an abundance of physical evidence supporting the jury's verdict that demonstrated that the accident did not occur as a result of any transmission fluid leak. The most likely two quick connects did not fail. Only the third one was damaged. It was damaged in the fire, and at the end of the accident, the transmission fluid reservoir was entirely full. So there was an abundance of evidence supporting the jury's verdict that had nothing to do with the two evidentiary rulings that the plaintiff urges were made in this case. Neither one of them had anything to do with the outcome. So that even if, and I don't concede it, but even if the trial court had made an error, it wasn't reversible error, had nothing to do with the case. Looking first at Exhibit 56, there's nothing in Exhibit 56 that in fact is impeaching of Mr. Banta's testimony, nor is there anything in Exhibit 56 that shows prior occurrence of the type this court has recognized in Nosh time, where there was no evidence that there were previous fires.
What is the relevance of prior occurrence? If these quick connects were defective, wouldn't that create liability?
The urged relevance of the prior knowledge was a failure to warn earlier. But there was, on the record in this case, 50 fires that Chrysler knew about.
So there's a separate theory of strict liability here, a failure to warn rather than just defective fires.
Yes, that's what the plaintiff was arguing. And there was enough evidence, if that was to support that theory, there was evidence introduced that Chrysler knew of 50 fires that were caused by a failure of the quick connects and were caused when the transmission fluid caught fire before they issued the recall. That was before the jury. The evidence in Exhibit 56 doesn't talk about whether there were any failures. It talks about some quick connects melting. It doesn't talk about whether those were the quick connects in this case or some different version of a quick connect.
Do we know from Mr. Banta's testimony more details like how close this quick connect might have been to the engine? I mean, this reason for the sequencing that he was talking about, that it was number one that usually failed first.
Yes, we do. And it doesn't have anything to do with the closeness to the engine. The transmission fluid gets hot when the engine is under load. It gets hot because there's a torque that's created between how fast the wheels are going and how fast the engine is going. And when the wheels are going slowly and the engine's going very quickly, like when you're plowing snow or like when you're driving in sand, the transmission fluid gets very hot. And because of the sequence of the piping through the transmission cooling lines, quick connect number one is by far the hottest. Quick connect two is next hotter. Then it goes through the cooling sequence again, so quick connect three is much cooler and quick connect four is still cooler.
Is this piping sequence always the same, or do we know from this Exhibit 56 whether it might have been different, whether there would have been any difference in materials for the quick connect in these earlier?
Well, the earlier equipment, which were Jeep Cherokees and not the BR Dodge Ram model that was in effect here, were different lighter duty cars, different types of engines. The sequence of the cooling was the same, but this was a much heavier duty engine in the BR model because it was designed to do heavier work. And there is no dispute between any of the experts for the plaintiff or the defendant as to the sequence of the cooling lines and which connector was likely to be the hottest. And the plaintiff's expert concedes that coupling one and coupling two were unaffected, were intact after the fire. Furthermore, if a transmission fluid fire does occur, that occurs when the transmission fluid is moving. And if it's moving and there's a leak, the transmission fluid reservoir empties itself in about a minute. Would have been empty at the end of this fire. And in fact, it was full. It was above the maximum level after this fire, proving that it was not a transmission fluid fire. Otherwise, the transmission fluid would have been gone.
Well, your theory, Daimler Chrysler's theory, was that it was the installation of this snowplow?
Yes.
Yeah.
That there was something that happened with the wiring in the snowplow that caused the short. And in fact, in the photographs that are admitted to this court in our exhibit, you can see where the power line to the snowplow is welded to the top of the wheel well, and that's copper that takes
a very high
pressure.
Who would have done that?
Excuse Excuse me?
Who had done that? Who had attached the snowplow?
The, actually, the plaintiff had installed the snowplow in conjunction with the owner of the plow, the owner of the truck. There was also no error in the alcohol motion in limine. Originally, the trial court granted the motion in limine, and the defendant never introduced any evidence. In fact, Mr. Wesley Jenkins, the father of the plaintiff, was the very first witness to take the stand.
Why were these suspensions of his driver's license relevant, though? I could imagine bringing in some evidence about the fact that he had a long history of alcoholism, but it does seem to me awfully prejudicial, since this wasn't a moving violation case, to bring in the fact that he had no driver's license.
Well, that may have been true at the time that the motion in limine was granted. Well,
even when the father testified, as Judge Posner said, easy enough to see that perhaps you want to say that his affect had been depressed before as well as after because he was an alcoholic, but why suspended driver's licenses?
Well, the suspended driver's license went to his employability. If he doesn't have a driver's license, he can't get to work.
I thought he dropped the lost wages claim.
He did drop the lost wages claim. And at that point, the fact that his driver's license was suspended was directly related to the fact that it was suspended because of the prior alcohol violation.
How long was it suspended for?
I don't remember. I'm sorry, I don't
remember. Maybe he found that very depressing. Couldn't drive.
Well, it was suspended after.
Americans can't drive. I don't know.
That could be.
People still drive with
not
the
a citizen.
Driver's license.
The evidence that was introduced after the plaintiff opened the door was extremely limited. There were two or three questions asked to the father and two or three questions asked to the son. The same questions: was the license suspended due to multiple alcohol violations, and were you admitted to mental health treatment due to alcohol-related issues? And the topic was dropped. It wasn't gone into at length. It was merely sufficient to rebut the father's implication that the son was in perfect mental health before the accident and was in terrible mental health after the accident, and that was entirely due to the accident. This was just introduced to rebut that implication. Mm-hmm. So we would ask this court to affirm the trial court's judgment entered on the verdict.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Spring. Mr. Haley, how much time does he have? Okay, well, you can have a minute. We're so generous.
Just very quickly, Your Honor. First of all, the case was never about ignition source. It was about takes three things: air, combustible fluid, and ignition source. The combustible fluid was transmission fluid. There was no question that the fire was started by transmission fluid, not respective of what quick connect failed first. It was fluid. The other thing that was, the employability was dropped. There was no issue in this case about lost wages, past or present. And that's the basis why that motion, I believe, in limine was granted to begin with. The sequence of the fire was that's sort of an irrelevant point.
How old was he?
He was in his mid-20s at the time of the fire. He's a young man. The bottom line is that the door was not open by their expert saying that, in fact, there had been failures, and he was allowed to cut those failures off at 1995, irrespective of when they really knew about the failures. But the relationship is convictions, the prior suspensions, all of those things were highly prejudicial, and if you look at the record in this case, even the judge herself, the magistrate herself, goes into detail about when she makes this ruling, she says, I'm seeing a pattern of conduct, and I think she is being influenced, as were the jurors, when this information, a stream of information about his post-accident, pre-accident, hospitalization for alcohol or treatment for alcohol, and the answer to your question, Your Honor, the mandatory 6-month suspension for DUI in Indiana.
I'm just curious, was there a motion to exclude the fact that he was drunk at the time of the accident? I mean, at the time of the fire?
No. We conceded that he had alcohol. That he had alcohol on board at the time of the fire. We
but
never moved
the test results. Never tried to keep those out.
No, we never tried to keep the fact that he was had alcohol on board at the time of the fire. The only thing that was disputed in the case is the levels. By the time they got him up to the University of Chicago Burn Center, the levels were lower than what their expert might have postulated. But that was the only dispute.
Okay. Thank you very much to both counsel.